Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, we're in Yeshaya, chapter 55, and we're still talking about redemption. And we had last week all the discussion about how that during the exile we felt like we were rejected, and how Hashem loves us forever, and that there's a short second where we've been rejected, but we always have a rule that Hashem's love and mercy is stronger than His attribute of justice, and that He will bring us back with great rejoicing. What do we do once we're back? What happens? What happens to the world? So there will be a big thirst for knowledge. There will be a thirst for spirituality. And there will be a lot of catching up to do, because a lot of our values and a lot of the things that people spend their time with, they'll discover are meaningless. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, all the, what is it, all the Hollywood stuff and all the entertainment and all the gossip, when you look in the, the magazines and the news, there's a huge amount that's just about who broke up with who and who's doing what and what the latest things that are not of significance. Even the sports, very little significance. And there are very important things. There are very important understanding what life is about, and what Hashem wants from us, and understanding how we can make ourselves better people. There are many things that we want to study and we want to know. And the metaphor for that knowledge is like water. Just like water a person can't live with and they're thirsty, so too people will be thirsty for the water. It'll be like a person that's dry and can't. When a person wants a drink of water and they're thirsty, it's all encompassing, and they have a strong thirst. So he begins with this. He says, "Hoy kol." You can imagine, all of a sudden, the world's going to find out that people have been wasting their time in foolish things and in the wrong things. And you can imagine how the other religions will feel, that people spent time in these things thinking. A lot of them believe that they themselves don't understand it, but they trust their family, they trust their heritage, it must be so. And then they'll be shocked to discover that it's meaningless and foolishness. So all of a sudden there'll be a big thirst for truth. So, hoy, whoa, he translates this one as ho, but meaning like, it means like you can imagine what it would be like all of a sudden. Just imagine if your neighbors were start knocking on the doors and saying, "Teach me Torah. I want to know what it's all about. You know, where's the truth? Where can, you're Jewish. You can tell me." You know, so all of a sudden everybody's going to be thirsty. People will come and they'll want to drink. They'll want to drink the waters. And these are waters that. These are things that people will want, and they haven't paid for it. They haven't exerted themselves. One of the things they'll discover is that it takes work. You got to come to class, and you got to invest in learning. There's a huge effort that. One of the challenges of learning is that a person has to invest in time and has to work on it and has to learn many concepts until they enjoy it, until they benefit from it. And so there'll be a lot of people that will want the water, but they are unwilling to pay for it, or they don't have the money to pay for it. They won't realize that it's something that requires effort and requires work. Now here the Torah is compared to a few things. It's compared to water, wine, and milk. All three things are very important things that society needs. And milk is like a mother's milk. It gives a person the a baby can't live without its mother's milk. It gives them the nutrients and the things that he needs. Water is basic. If a person doesn't have water, they dehydrate and they can't function. And then wine is pure enjoyment. And Torah can be all of those. In other words, there's Torah that's essential, that we just, I can't live without knowing what my what's required of me, what I need to do. And then there's the idea that if a person has no spirituality, they burn out, they dry up, there's nothing, their life has no meaning. And then there's just learning for enjoyment, that it's like wine, it's like fine wine, that it has a great flavor. That was really like, it's stimulating. Verse 2, Lama tishku kesta below lechem. And people, they spend their money and they put their effort into other things, and they don't get any bread out of it. They don't get any spirituality. V'giyachem b'lo l'soiva, and they work and they don't satisfy themselves. Shamu shemoa, you know, really listen this time. In other words, basically hear from the word shema, elai to me. V'ochlotuv, and if you listen, then you will, instead of wasting your time and wasting your money, you will eat well. V'sanik b'deshe nafsha, and then you will satisfy your soul in fatness. In other words, each of us has, just like we have a body that's physically hungry and thirsty, we all have a soul, a spiritual soul, that's looking for nourishment. And we have to satisfy that soul. Verse 3. Hitu aznachem. Pay attention. Let me have your ear. Lechu elai, and come to me. Shamu uski nafshechem. If you listen, you'll have life. You'll hear life-giving things. Shamu, listen, uski nash, and become alive. And you will make a covenant. And this refers to non-Jews too, by the world. This prophecy that people that are seeking spirituality isn't limited to the Jewish people. It refers to the whole world. In other words, the whole world, when the Mashiach comes, will be thirsty and will be looking for life-giving waters. So we'll make a covenant, and it'll be a permanent covenant, and it'll be led by the Mashiach. Chaste David Hanemanim. David is the messianic from the house of David. Verse 4. Hein Eid Le'umim. And why David? Because he's a witness to the nations. In other words, he will be the world leader. The Mashiach won't be only ours, by the way. In other words, the Mashiach from the house of David will be a world leader. He'll be a leader to all the nations. And he will be a witness to the nations. Nagid mitzav, and he's going to tell them what to do. He'll be a commander. That's what English calls them, a commander. But basically, he'll teach mankind. Verse 5, Hein goy, lo teda, people won't know. There'll be nations that don't know. Tikr v'goy lo yaducha, and they don't know about you. Elecha yirutzu, and all of a sudden, they're going to come running. They're going to come running to the Mashiach. They'll come running to the Jewish people. Laman Hashem Elokecha, because they want to know about Hashem, your God, Ulekadosh Yisrael, and the holy people of Israel. And Hashem will, when the nations, the world, the United Nations will come and say, you know, they'll want to seek out Hashem, Hashem will brag to them about the Jewish people, Kifah, right? Because he glorifies in the Jewish people. And look at my people that have been loyal to me and have kept my ideals. This part now is what they call the Haftorah for the fast days. On the fast days, that we have 5 days a year, when they have a fast, they read a Haftorah in Mincha. Sounds funny because we don't usually have a Haftorah in Mincha time, but they have a Haftorah that they read after the Torah reading in the afternoon, and they read this this part of this Haftorah. And there's two parts to this. There's a part in general people will seek knowledge. And then there's a part that people have done wrong things and they'll need to change and they'll need to do teshuvah. And a fast day is all about change. And some people see a fast day as like a hunger strike. Like that's really what it is. We're not, things need to change. People call a hunger strike as a last resort. But a fast day is that a person needs to stop and retool and refocus. And so when a person is fasting, he's supposed to be looking at his deeds and seeing how he can change. That's the main idea of a fast day is before life continues, I'm not going to put any more food in my mouth till I figure out how to fix the mistakes that I've made and fix the wrongs. And we know, most of us know people that have been doing that are not perfect people, and somehow they never fix their mistakes. They go back to their mistakes. There are people that have a drinking problem, and they've had a drinking problem forever. There are people that they have unhealthy habits. Let's say they smoke, and they're still unhealthy habits, and they know they should do something, they don't. And then there are people that are abusive, that lose their temper, and they yell at people, and they hurt people that are close with them, and they don't fix it. We're aware that all people have mistakes and things that need fixing, but we have certain times of the year where we're supposed to think about fixing our mistakes and about really changing. And that's a basic concept in Judaism, that nobody's perfect, but the things need to be fixed, and that there's nobody that doesn't need to fix things. And the fast days are supposed to be major times for people to say, all right, what am I doing wrong? What can I fix? What can I improve? And this is the Haftorah that we read on the fast day, because this was the message given at the Messianic times for mankind to return to Hashem. So this is it begins like this. Dear Shu Hashem, the first thing is each person has to seek out Hashem. A lot of people wait for God to come to you. You can't wait for God to come to you. You've got to go to Him. If you're interested in Hashem, Dear Shu, seek Him out. And he'll be found. Some people say if you look for him, you'll see him. you have to look for him first. You can't expect him to just come to you in the middle. You have to seek him out. Now they say, when is it that you can seek him out? They say that during the 10 days of Rosh Hashanah, between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, that's where you can find Hashem. In other words, it's easy to find him. The rest, sometimes it's much harder the rest of the year. Other times people say that anytime you have a group that seeks out Hashem, he can be found. It's whenever you have more than one person involved. But it's much easier to do it when he's close. And that's what they say. In other words, if you seek out Hashem when he's close, when he can be found, that's the time. And so each person should try to strive for holiness, for good things, to try to find his Creator. Verse 7. Wicked people, they're on the wrong path. They're going the opposite way. They're going away from godliness. So they need to leave that right away. In other words, let's say they're exploiting people. Let's say they live a life of just pleasure and not about important things. So they have to leave their way. Or if they harm people, Yazav Rosh Hadarko, a wicked person, first of all, stop going on the bad path. Now, there's some people that aren't actually doing things wrong, but they're thinking about it. In other words, if they were given the means, they would do a lot more harm. So those people have to change their thoughts. The ish oven, people that are crooked, makshavosav, they got to fix it. So there's some people that are actually wicked. They're harming people. They're doing wrong things. They need to abandon that road right away. And then there's some people that are just crooked. They're just thinking, so you know what? They better change their thought process. Wish it was so easy, right? Just make up your mind, that's all. You know, with Yazav, you know, if I'm doing something wrong, I'm rejecting that. If I'm thinking the wrong thoughts, I'm going away from there. And then, Vishav El Hashem, go back to Hashem. Now, why? If a person is already wicked and he's done these things, what will happen? Guess what? V'yirachmeyo, Hashem will take pity on you. If you do teshuva, Hashem accepts you. The El Elokeinu, and to our God, to the Jewish God, and Ki Yarbe L'Shloach, because He forgives people. When they try to improve, when they come back to Him, they do get forgiven. Some people, they say, oh, there's no hope. They can't be forgiven. No, we don't believe that way. We believe that if a person is sincere and they want to change, Hashem will accept them. It's a very interesting verse, the way the next thing is expressed. We often see Hashem as a human. You know, like if we were a human, well, sometimes we're more down on ourselves than Hashem is. We say there's no hope for me, and that's not Ki lo makshavosai makshavoseichem. Hashem says, I don't think the way you think. V'lo d'racheichem d'rachai, and I don't act the way you act. Sometimes we would not take pity on someone who's tried a million times to do better and still does wrong. We reach a point where we wouldn't forgive a person like that. Hashem doesn't think of it the way we do. Hashem is much more merciful. In fact, that's one of the things we say in benching, that we say that we hope to get it straight from Hashem and not through humans. Because humans, as nice as they may be, they're human. They can be cruel. They can suffer from certain selfishness. Hashem is just pure love. like there's nothing. So Hashem doesn't think of it the way we do. He's rooting for us. He's hoping for us. There's so many people that they don't do things in life because they say, oh, it's too late for me. Hashem will never forgive me. How can I approach Hashem? You know what? He's waiting for you. Of course you can approach Hashem. He doesn't think of it the way you do. He doesn't act the way you do. He loves us more than we love ourselves many times. Verse 9, Ki gavu shamayim ha'aretz. We know there's a distance from the ground to heaven. Ken gavu darchai, I mean, so is the distance between the way of humans and the way of Hashem, and the way of our thoughts and the way of His thoughts. Ki kasher yerid hageshem v'shalg min shamayim. Hashem sends down the rain and the snow from the heavens, and it never goes back. What do we mean it doesn't go back? It comes down to the world to bestow goodness on the world. Hashem brings the rain and the snow, kim hiva es oretz, to cause the land to become wet so that food will grow, so that mankind can eat and be satiated. Vaholida, and it produces new things and growth. Vanasin zerulas areya, and it produces foods and seeds and bread. Whatever Hashem does, it's to bestow goodness on the world. Kein yia devari asher yetz mipiv. And so too, Hashem's words, His words of Torah, lo yoshev elei reikam, they don't go back empty. There is an idea that even when you study, that the words of Torah change you. Sometimes you don't see it. Sometimes we believe that you should study with a person just for the sake of studying. And you might say, well, what does that do? Let's say you study some esoteric subject. You study the clothing that the Kohen Gadol wore on Yom Kippur, right? So that's not about returning something stolen. That's not about the being honest in business. I'm just studying the Kohen Gadol's clothing that he wore on Yom Kippur. But we believe that words of Torah don't come back empty-handed, that they change people. And there are people that have... it's interesting, they have yeshivas, mostly in Israel, that specialize in teaching people that have never learned Torah before. And they don't necessarily learn many of them learn like ethics, and they learn about Hashem, but some of them learn the esoteric subjects. In fact, it's funny, Kabbalah is very popular. Sometimes the less people understand, the better. They just want to, I'm not necessarily a fan of that approach, but learning Torah itself, the word of Hashem, part of the problem with Kabbalah is what they claim is Kabbalah really isn't. Because those that know don't teach it, and those that teach it don't know, as they say. Madonna is not the expert on Kabbalah or any of the, but there is something about learning Torah, even if there are parts of Torah that to us don't seem to have an effect on us. Hashem says we have a guarantee over here that His words don't come back empty. Just the same way as the rain comes and it nourishes the ground, so too the words of Hashem, verse 11, these words come out, they don't come back empty-handed. They achieve their effect. And they're sent out to do what they're meant to do. And so that's like we learn Torah and somehow it works. We don't know how, we don't know where the...
Torah Lishma.
That's correct, that's right. Torah for its own sake. One of the... there's a concept of having scholars like study Torah in a community. We have like a kolol. And one of the things that they've discovered is that... sometimes it's as effective on the non-religious community as it is the religious community, which would be surprising. Like, why would having a kollel affect the non-religious? They don't come to shul anyways, or they don't. Somehow, whenever there's Torah learning, then Judaism thrives. We're the people of the book. In other words, we believe that Torah learning is the most powerful thing that exists. We don't fully understand what it is. It's the words of Hashem, and so it's a powerful thing, and it affects the surroundings. And so, communities that have Torah learning, Jews in those communities come back and they study and they change and they become committed. And in our community, this particular Torah that they have, most of the kollel does outreach, which is where they go and they actually teach on a level to people that are unaffiliated. But there are many places where the Kollelim, they don't necessarily do outreach. They just study Torah. They just study whatever the... one of the things that's happening is across the street, they're hoping to bring in 10 Torah scholars next year so that the Sephardic community will grow. They're starting a Sephardi Kollel next year, and one of the reasons is because the regular Kollel was so successful in helping the community grow, and it's a proven fact that, like I said, if you have if they bring in 10 Torah scholars, it's going to change the community, and they'll see that that's Rabbi Kapenstein's involved with that, with Rabbi Kushkerman. But the idea that the words of Hashem have effect on us that we never fully understand, that's addressed over here, that his words, they go and they have an effect and somehow they work. But as you said, it should be words that are for Hashem's sake. In other words, to what we call Torah Lishma, for his sake. Sometimes people have Torah where they learn it for the wrong reasons, or they put their own two cents in, it has to be approached with an honesty, Torah with an honesty, that's just wanting to learn the word of Hashem. Verse 12, this they actually made into a song that they sing at goodbye parties, which, sometimes people, it's very sad when somebody leaves, this says that you should go forth and come out in happiness and joy. Your going and your coming should be in joy. There'll be people that'll be leaving their communities around the world and coming to Israel. And it's sad, we lived for all these years in different places, and we've established ourselves, and we'll have to leave it behind to go to seek out the word of Hashem. So Hashem says, don't worry, it's going to be a happy time. Keep a simcha teitzah, we'll go out in joy. And in peace, we'll come back. Because that's where we really belong. One of the interesting things are people find that many times on their first trip to Israel is that they have a strange feeling like they're coming home. It's nobody knows how to explain it exactly. Like people that have in their family, there have been 2,000 years since people in their family have lived in Israel, and they'll come back, and it's a land that they've never seen, and it's not really appealing necessarily by American standards. It's not as fancy. It's not as luxurious, people feel that they're coming home. They come back in joy. There's a certain joy to coming back to the land that they know that their forefathers and mothers have prayed to be able to come back. And so it's kind of described over here that we'll come back in joy and in peace. It's interesting language here. It talks about the mountains and the valleys clapping, dancing. Sometimes the words mountains means like our forefathers. In fact, that's in the Chumash, the mountains were called like the Avos, and the Imahos were called the mountains. They're the high up, in other words, our ancestors will be there clapping for us when we come back to the land of Israel. But there's also an idea that nature itself will be happy. The mountains and the valleys, Yiftachu lifneichem, they'll burst out in song. And over here, Rina is not just a song, it's a happy song. The Kol Atzei Asada, and all the woods of the forest will start clapping. It's an interesting description, the woods of the forest, all the trees will start waving. We see in nature that nature sings to Hashem when it does its when it does its thing. Sometimes when a person sees something particularly moving, we get used to living in a very beautiful place. Sometimes visitors are here and they look around, they say, it's beautiful here, And I say, well, I always see these trees or these flowers we're just so used to it. I guess if you lived in cement or on asphalt, and then you came to a city that has hills and trees but all of the trees, they all clap, they all sing to Hashem. Now, in the land of Israel right now doesn't look so hospitable. There's a lot of weeds there. So Hashem says, that's no problem. Tachas natsus yala barosh. In the place where there was a weed bush, there'll be a cypress. Tachas atirpad, and in place of where there was nettle, I don't know what nettle is, also like weeds or thorns, yala hadas, you'll have myrtle trees. In other words, the land will change. It'll come back to life. Rashi says these are thorn bushes. that was in the place of the thorn bushes, so there's a lot of thorns there, that's no problem, they'll be replaced. V'hayu l'Hashem, and these things will be to Hashem l'shem, they'll be for a sign, la'os olam. It'll be a sign forever when they come back to the land of Israel, how it's regrown and how it's become a land of beauty. La'os olam, it'll be forever a sign, lo yikares, and it'll never be cut off. And so this is all part of that beautiful prophecy, what will happen to the Eretz Israel in that time. The Haftarah actually continues. I think I've mentioned to you a number of times that the chapters are not, they weren't given by God, the divisions of the chapters. It's just, they just had to break it up certain ways, and they usually chose to break it up in a reasonable way, but not always. Sometimes it was just, okay, stop here. And sometimes it stops in the middle of a thought. And other times it's more valuable. Ki ka'amar Hashem, thus says Hashem, shama mishpat. Hashem says, you have to be careful to do the right thing. Being careful means if you're not careful, it's very easy to not do the right thing. Shomer means you got to guard. A person just can't assume it's going to happen right. He has to guard it. He has to make sure. And then, v'asu tzedakah. And then, after you've done the right thing, you could talk about doing charity. But first, you got to make sure you're doing the right thing. Ki krova yeshuasi level, because my salvation is at hand, v'sidkasi l'dayos, and my righteousness will be revealed to everybody. Verse 2, Ashrei Enosh Yasezos. Fortunate is the person who does this, uben adam yaksik bo, and any human, all you got to do is be son of a man, a son of a human being, of flesh and blood. He says, shomer Shabbos michalo, a person has to keep the Shabbos and has to be careful not to profane it. V'shada yada, and he has to watch his hand that he doesn't hit people with it or he doesn't harm people with it. This is the There once was the early reform movement wasn't sure what to do with itself because they built themselves as a Jewish movement. And so in order to be a Jewish movement, they wanted to say, they wanted to relate to previous times, and so they wanted to emphasize, they called themselves prophetic Judaism. That was the early reform movement. I used to live in Cincinnati where they had Hebrew Union College, so I used to hear some of their philosophies. But the claim was, and it's somewhat true, that the prophets always talked about morals, about being upright and good, and they didn't talk so much about mitzvos. So they related to that, because they weren't that focused on mitzvos. They were focused on being a good person and tikkun olam. And the only thing is, there are a couple of verses that they kind of wish weren't written, you know, or just like the Christians, they quoted selectively. You just got to, the verses, it is, you can't get around certain things. In other words, it is true that the prophets focused on behavior between man and man. And we're told that the second temple was destroyed because the people weren't nice to each other. And it says that people, they kept kosher, they kept Shabbos, but they weren't nice to each other. They said they hated each other for no reason. That was the primary reason that the temple was destroyed. And so, therefore, it makes sense that the prophets would mostly be saying to the people, you're not treating each other right, you're not taking care of your workers, you're not taking care of the widows and the orphans and the poor and the people that have no one to stand up for them. And so that it's natural that the prophets would mostly speak about that because that was the primary sin they were dealing with at that time. But the prophets definitely talked about mitzvahs also. And so here also he says, Shomer Shabbos Michalo, the person, if you want to be fortunate, you got to be careful not to violate the Shabbos, and you have to be careful not to harm people. We often say, if you ever look, the Ten Commandments is divided in two tablets. There's those mitzvahs between man and man and God. And they're both very, very important. It's very important that, you know, a person has to believe in Hashem and has to serve Hashem and has to be focused on the Shabbos. And it's very important that a person not steal and not kill and be a nice person. And one without the other is not Judaism. It's always the combination of the two. And so you see that here as well. Now, what about the non-Jews? What are they going to say? V'ayom ben anecha halo ve'el Hashem le'mor. There are people that might feel that they're far away from this. What about the stranger? What about the convert that has, he was not born to Judaism and he came from afar. And he will say, Havdil Yavdilin Hashem Be'alam, I'm separate from the Jewish people. There are people that might feel that I understand that Judaism works for the Jews, or that being religious works for those that are in the religious community. But what about the foreigners? What about the people that don't have that? Al Yomer Hasaris, or what about the person who feels it's too late for him? Many people, you know, for example, Torah learning comes, if you studied in Jewish schools for 20 years and you went through day schools and yeshiva high schools and you got all the language, and so then it's relatively easy to go and study Talmud or study Kabbalah or study, because you have the tools. But if you weren't exposed to that and you're already an adult and then you want to try to learn Torah, it's very difficult. You might say it's too late for me. And there's some people that they don't study. Some people, they always thought once they retired or once they had more time, I thought we should double, triple the class. There are a lot of people, but you know, some people don't come because they don't want to admit how little they know. They're afraid, because if they would come, that would show that they are missing certain knowledge, and they're uncomfortable with that. And it's they've got to get over that. I've heard that from people, that they feel embarrassed to go to a class, you know, they feel like, because they're used to, there's professionals that in their field they excelled and they're used to being looked up to, and so then to go to a class where other people know more than them, and the teacher is somebody who's younger than them, they feel it's an obstacle. And it's real. We have to deal with that. In other words, people feel like it's too late for me, I can't, I'm separated for it. So, Hashem says a very interesting thing. Kiko Amar, we're only going to read two more verses. I'm going to keep it too late here. But Kiko Amar Hashem. Hashem says, now they use this word, the Soros, they call it a eunuch, because the people that were working in the king's palace, who were like the officers in the king's palace, a lot of them were castrated, because this way they wouldn't be tempted to take the king's wives. The kings had big harems in those days, the Babylonian kings. And the idea of having a Jewish lawyer or a Jewish attorney or a Jewish advisor was well known from ancient times. The Jews were always known to be very wise and give very good counsel. And so the ancient kings all hired Jewish people to be their advisors. But to work in those environments, they castrated them. So if a person is castrated, they have no hope of having a family. And they're living amongst Gentiles. And those kind of people, Daniel was one such person, by the way. But there were others that, you know, that were taken away from their people and brought up in foreign palaces, and they have no hope of ever having a family. What do they live for? Like, what do they what can they do? So Hashem speaks to these people, and he says, a person should never feel that it's too late for them. It should never feel that they're sterile, that they can't produce. The fact that you serve Hashem, you have no idea what that produces. We, again, our value, Hashem's value system is different than ours. We don't necessarily look at. And the next line we're going to get to is going to talk about Yad Vashem. And one of the reasons they chose that was a number of the Holocaust survivors. Some of them were sterile, some of them was too late to get married, some of them had lost all their children, and so they felt there was no hope for them. Where was their, how does the world speak to somebody who feels that it's too late for me, I can't produce, I can't study, I didn't learn when I was younger, I can't have children, I'm the person, people who were sterile, I can't, they missed out, in this world, they're not valued for what they can produce. So Hashem speaks to all of them, and he says, this is what Hashem says. He says, he says to the eunuchs that keep my Shabbos, and Ubachu, and they seek out Hashem, and they keep my covenant, guess what? Nesati lehem bevesi, you are the ones, the important ones. You are going to be the ones that are high placed in my house. You're going to be in the Hall of Fame. Bechomosa yad v'shem, and you'll be famous. And What you produce, those of you that are loyal to me, that'll be better than all the children and all the daughters and all the, in other words, those people, again, and this spoke to the Holocaust survivors because, you know, they lost their families, they lost the chance to have families, but they stayed loyal to Hashem, they stayed loyal Jews. And so Hashem says that those of you that chose this way, you're going to be in my house and you're going to be in my wall and you will have Yad Vashem, you will have literally a hand and a name. Like the hand means that your efforts to improve the Jewish people will continue, and that'll be better than all the kids, Hashem Olam, and your name will last forever. And it'll never be erased. Like, you know, sometimes you have donors, they give now, and then they, and then they remodel, and then, you know, there's a new building campaign. Well, you gave to the old campaign, but you're no longer on the list, you know, or I think of that when I pass, there's a picture of the guy that donated the old social hall that I passed on the way in, and, you know, and so it's nice that they kept the picture. I still remember that he gave the old, but now there's a new social hall, and there'll be a new sanctuary. Well, they remember the guy that gave the doors to the old sanctuary. Well, sometimes there's a new plaque, and the old plaque doesn't stay up anymore. So Hashem says that in Hashem's house, once you get your name up there, it'll never be taken down. And that's the Shelo Yikares. So that's the, we'll continue on. We'll probably start this again because it's a very famous chapter, a beautiful thought. But that's the thought he wants to say, is that you know, we shouldn't let things stand in our way. You know, it's too late for me. What am I going to accomplish? You know, whatever that is. Hashem says, no, you know, it's never too late for anybody. If a person, you know, if he maksikim bevrisi, he keeps my covenant. The word maksik means, that's like the last in verse 4, is that he continues on doing the right things. He's always trying to do the right. He keeps up in the good way. So then these are our heroes. These are the ones that make it to Hashem's house.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.